Hi, I'm Gordon Lanphier, and welcome to the Real Finds podcast, where we have real conversations with key entrepreneurs, activists, and researchers who are shaping the real estate industry and, as a result, our world. On today's podcast, we'll be speaking with Bob Cicero, hybrid work and sustainable leader at Cisco. Tired of badge swipe data, Bob reveals how to turn your existing Wi-Fi cameras and BLE into a live x-ray of how work actually happens. He explains the platform approach that cleans and normalizes data automatically, so you design once, learn continuously, and improve from there. From Penn One in New York to Class A office portfolios, he shows how tech-first planning crushes meeting misery and wasted space.
Bob, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today.
Gordon, thank you for having me here.
So what got you interested in real estate and how people work?
It's an interesting question. If you, well, technologist at heart, but I've always loved architecture and great design. And if you look at the way we've worked and the transformation we've had over the past couple of decades, it was more and more technology was provided in terms of providing our work experience. And now, effectively, when you think about the physical and virtual world coming together, it's all driven by technology. But yet, from a real estate point of view, technology is often not thought about. It's always last. And so if we're really going to have a great combination of people and space and technology, we have to think about the overlap there in terms of how that all going to work together. I just always found it fascinating.
So how does it work together in this modern era? Like, we've got so much going on. We have AI, we have rapid technological change in terms of just general processing power. How do we work with technology?
It's a great question. We, as in the technology world, we think about a platform. We think about a platform approach in terms of you have a Wi-Fi network, you have a wired switching network from a technology aspect, and it's really a platform that's horizontal that touches everything that you do. And so we thought about how do we take that concept and bring it to the real estate world in terms of really thinking about how do we amplify the intersection of people and space. And we knew that technology is providing all these experiences, so we have to bring that forward from a design perspective. And so when we think about that notion of platform, we really center around the four elements of, how do you think about physical virtual coming together? How do you drive a frictionless experience when you're physically in person? How do you think about sustainability goals in terms of thinking about the amount of just not energy we use, but also embodied carbon, those other elements? How do we look at health and wellness inside the workplace? So you think about health and wellness and air quality and some of those other elements. And then ultimately, it's really data. It's really data that really comes together to perform that foundational model. And that's really where the aha moment is around a lot of organizations, where it's really the data that's going to drive us forward. Because if you look at AI and everything from an AI point of view, if you don't have the right data, you're not going to have the right model. So at some point, you have to get the right data elements together across the board. And we think that's a combination of some elements that we provide from a technology standpoint. Like, for example, Wi-Fi is a great sensor. We know where people are from the point of view of like understanding how buildings are getting loaded. We're adding intelligence into the way that we communicate now with, in terms of counting people inside of a room. How do we take all of that data and form models around that to be able to drive priorities, not just for individual companies, but building structures in terms of thinking about how space should be built and really understanding how people are working? And I think that's the opportunity that we all have now collectively. If we take a fresh look at the standpoint of technology should be brought forward in terms of how we think about design and rollouts and all those other elements, but it's really data that underpins it all.
So how do we get good data? Because like there's all sorts of data out there, right? And sometimes it can seem like bailing the ocean if you just are gathering all the data and putting it into whatever storage device that you're using to sort it from. How do we get good data and how do we actually utilize it?
It's a great question. I think if you look at, often say in the real estate, in the industry, it's a lot of single point products that are purchased that solve a specific use case. For example, like I'm going to go buy an occupancy sensor to count people. Okay, great. That's the only thing the device actually does. And so if you have all these disparate data sets, you're automatically going down this path of forcing all the data, typically throw all that data into a data lake. You're putting in a data lake and you have to look at the data. You have to sometimes clean the data, scrub the data, normalize the data before you can do anything valuable with it. And that's why we think this platform approach in terms of let us do that as a technology company, because that's what we do. And don't think about these discrete elements across the board and think about technology as this massive expense that's going to solve this little problem. Think about it from this roadmap aspect for that platform. And you're going to find that you don't have those challenges in terms of taking all this data, having to scrub it, having to normalize it, right? All those other elements, like that happens automatically. And now you can really look at the data that's going to form actual outcomes in terms of what the problem set is that you're trying to solve for. So yes, data has to have good hygiene. Of course, we have great data hygiene, but it's really this approach in terms of thinking about data and mapping it out at the onset and really having a strategy around it versus having all these silos of data and just throwing them into a data lake and trying to make it all work together.
So I can imagine the data needs of a company vary substantially based on what that company is, right? So like if you have your manufacturer, you're going to care a lot more about things like understanding input and output that's going into the manufacturing process. When employees are showing up, maybe you're looking at factors like air quality, but then you have vastly different data sets for companies like your tech companies, for example. Like one tech company I'm working with right now, they are really heavily focused on looking at third spaces and spaces of gathering and how their employees are gathering and how they're utilizing meeting spaces. So I'm curious, how does that map and data set change for you guys when you're evaluating a company and kind of how does it shape your perspective on how you're gathering the data in the first place?
It's a really good question because we think about the industries, right? The verticals, if you would. They all have different use cases, but if you boil it back, it's really the same data set. So like take occupancy as an example. You ask most organizations, like, how are we working? And a lot of them are like, well, we think we might, you know, our average meeting size is say 8 people and we're going to build 8-person rooms, but they don't have the data to substantiate that, hey, it's really, we're actually working in small group collaboration, right? Like as an organization, we work in small groups. Most organizations actually work in small groups. And so we don't see that really bifurcated amongst industries. It's really the same, right? Healthcare has different use cases, right? You think about tumor boards and them getting together physically. There's a lot of, you know, doctors in the room, but then they're pulling in people in virtually. But it really, from the industry standpoint, it's really the same horizontal approach from a technology standpoint that we're taking all this data up out of. And then we're customizing it based on the industry use case in terms of thinking about like a manufacturing floor, naturally very different than an office space or a healthcare environment. But the way you grab it, it's still the same way. And so this notion of that platform aspect really resonates with every single vertical because it is this standardized approach. And the reality is a lot of the data exists already, but the challenge is that it's sitting in IT. And IT may not be talking to real estate leaders or talking to plant operators. But IT has a lot of this data already because everything is already connected. There's intelligence embedded into everything that we do. We've added AI capabilities to, say, our video technology for years where we can count people. But folks don't even know it's there, right? So part of this is a aha moment of exposing it up and understanding what you actually have to start with. And then there could be augmentation inside of that. But by and large, when you look at all the industries that we service, it's the same data. It's the same way you gather it, but the little permutations and the use cases may be different across it, depending on the industry we're trying to serve.
So when you're talking about serving industries, one of the biggest things that I've seen you guys do is look at blending physical and digital experiences. So we're not going into Tron, right? But at the same time, we are blending with technology these days. So I'm curious, how do you see that process going? And can you give me some case examples of where the physical and digital world is blending for a more productive work environment?
For sure. It's always, this notion after the post-pandemic, this notion of, digital equity or video equity has popped up in terms of, video conferencing has been around for years. And the pandemic really, thrust it to the forefront around cameras are always on, but people are used to it. But the complaint was that physical and virtual coming together is always a challenge because you couldn't see people's faces in the room. And so we took a fresh look at that for like our own facility when we first built our New York City Penn 1 location, is this notion of technology forward. So if you look at the traditional A&D process, is technology is always last on the bus. It's architect does the work in terms of drawing, what the room is going to look like and the, the physical aspects of it. Someone from workplace typically picks the furniture and the chairs, right? All the, furniture that's in the space. And then in the last minute, you'd be like, oh yeah, IT, we got to talk to them because IT is going to have some sort of screen and they're going to have some sort of wireless probably. They're going to need some ports to plug things into. Like, what does that look like? And most of the time we were entering it in the process where it's like, you're 90% DD sometimes. Like, and oh, we have to issue these drawings because we got to get this place built. We took a fresh look and said, we have to flip that model. And so when we look at that from a model perspective is we really think about if we really are trying to amplify the intersection of people, space, and technology, it's about the user. So we think about the end user experience first now. So we look at, you're going to brainstorm, you're going to learn, you're going to problem solve, right? You're going to have a collaborative meeting or focus work. So what are the modes of work? The second choice we now make is the technology that goes in the room. And then after we make that choice, which is all governed by camera angles and all the pieces that you think about that the technology has to adhere to, the third choice we make now is the furniture. If you walk into any one of our modern spaces, there is no square or rectangular tables. There's most of the time it's travel portal tables.
And why is that?
Why is that? Because when you have a trapezoidal table, you think about a camera that's in the front of the room, is the camera needs to see everyone. And that slight angle of that table allows everyone to have a face in the meeting. And if we allow everyone to have a face in the meeting, then we've solved that physical and virtual coming together. And actually, if you were to visit us, you put it in self-view and actually see the remote participants see, the table actually looks like still like a rectangle or a square, depending on the orientation of the table. But yet everyone still has a face in the meeting. And that's where we really think we've broken down the physical and virtual elements. And we have some other tools that we use in terms of looking at our capabilities on the video side where we can frame people in their individual frames that are physically in a room. So the remote participants still see, the Hollywood Squares approach from a video standpoint. We got used to over the pandemic. So we have the tools to do that. But it's really this melding of technology should be forward. Look at furniture. Room size and layout should actually be last if we do it right. And that's what we found success with in terms of looking at that and taking that approach for all of our modern spaces.
So what do you think this means ultimately long-term for the design of future office spaces? Do you think it's tech first and space second, or do you think it's kind of a blending of the two?
I think it's a blending of the two, but technology can't be last, right? Technology, we're not saying first, like forward. It's forward in the process, right? In terms of that governing model, in terms of how you think about design. But every single one of the spaces and every single customer that we've engaged with, they've done this. They've what they've seen is this unlocking of capability of really have a really super effective physical and virtual world come together. And this notion of designing with data is also part and parcel to this whole entire change as well. Because how do I use data that I have about the way I operate as in my specific business to actually drive what my space should look like? We have the data, right? We talked about that standardized data approach and how we collect it and what we use from a technology standpoint to do that. We have that data should inform design. And so we often think about this notion of a learn loop in terms of thinking about what the outcomes went out of the space, build it, grab the data and iterate consistently from this optimization aspect, whether it's for current site, future sites, et cetera. But at the end of the day, you have to be mindful of the data. And that's where we think the change that needs to happen in the industry standpoint is, yes, technology needs to be brought forward, but understanding the data is super critical around what and how I apply that data set to the spaces that we're thinking about in the future.
Can you give me an example of when that data set was used, or a data set was used, I should say, for general office productivity that added value? Because I've got a lot of folks that are in our client base that are always skeptical. And particularly they're skeptical because a lot of the data that they've used in the past is just like things like card swipes, right? Or computer logins. And they have very little idea of some of the data sets that people are using to judge work productivity. What are you guys seeing applied, and kind of how does that play out in terms of productivity benefits?
It's a great question. We've seen it all, right? You think about the badge, and the badge is, that's my front door, and then it might be in a secure area, but you don't badge into all your offices, right? All your individual offices or quiet rooms, huddle rooms, et cetera. And so that what we've used and what we've seen and what we're actually doing and at scale now across the globe is the video capabilities and the assets that you have in the room. If it's the right asset, like our devices, we're actually counting people. And when we looked at this in our first location, which we opened in April of 2022, but design started during the pandemic, we had the technology to look at actually how we were working. And so all of our spaces were built for three people. Everyone said, wait, we've never built spaces for three people. We're the 6-person, 12-person, 18-person rooms. What we proved was is that we actually don't work that way. We work in small groups. And so we've taken that data, and every huddle room that we have is, you know, 3-person, 4-person sometimes. And that allows us to, one, not be just efficient use of space, but we also are now able to have all the technology elements inside of every space that people use, because the video is everywhere. Because it's going to be a physical and virtual world that we had talked about coming together. We also use that from the standpoint of looking at what people like. Like, people vote with their feet, right? Vote with their feet that they use from the standpoint of the spaces that they love. So as we try to iterate and look at new types of spaces, there's a space that we built in New York that became almost like a luxury suite view of higher seating, lower seating, some space seating, and it wasn't a traditional table. It was an experiment. And the experiment was, are people gonna like this? What we saw from the data was, it was the most highly utilized space that we had. And oh, by the way, it was in the middle of a massive floor plate with no windows. So we said, okay, we put it here for a reason. Then we started doing user surveys, and they're like, we love it. It fosters collaboration, it fosters brainstorming, it fosters all these things. So we proved that, and looking and recognizing the data, trying something, then we took that to our next site, which was Atlanta. We built four of them, right? Now it's this constant iteration of that approach, right? But the video technology and the assets that you have, it's, if it's the right technology, is available in the call or out of the call, right? Like, we have NVIDIA technology inside of all of our devices where it's that magic that's there that's actually looking at that. Wi-Fi is another great example of data. And not just Wi-Fi that we have from our connectivity perspective, but Bluetooth low energy, BLE, soon to be ultra wideband. All of these technologies are above our head anyway. Now we're starting to use that with those data sets. And we often do an exercise with our clients around understanding sort of what data they have already. So we start with like macro floor plate load as an example with surveillance cameras. So surveillance cameras are going to be there for safety and security purposes. Well, if you add a little bit of intelligence there, I can actually count people. Then we look at Wi-Fi data. Then we look at video data inside the rooms, and then desk level data as well. So it's those pieces that we sort of stitch together to be able to get that view, to be able to drive those actual outcomes that I mentioned before, whether it's room size, whether it's what people like, how they vote with their feet, but tying that together and be able to provide that capability at scale across the portfolio.
Can you go into greater depth on kind of what Wi-Fi data particularly you're looking at and kind of how you're using it?
You look at Wi-Fi, and we think about Wi-Fi as a form of connectivity, certainly, right? People, a lot of times, its first form of connectivity is Wi-Fi. And the Wi-Fi element from that standpoint is that I know when that device gets there, right? And we've developed machine learning in the cloud and a platform we have called Cisco Spaces that It's in the cloud. It does dedupe of data. So if you and I have multiple devices, we're not double counting people. And that gives us the capabilities for understanding what's, you know, out there across the floor and zoning. The challenge with Wi-Fi is that it goes through walls, right? RF penetrates through walls. So that's when we turn to that other set of data. So it's a really good use of understanding zoning of like how people are using a zone. But if you're saying, hey, I have a quiet room that's one person, Wi-Fi bleeds through the walls. But the reality is that Wi-Fi as a connectivity technology is great. So we have the telemetry really getting down to zones and floors and that type of granularity. But the Wi-Fi capabilities that are above our heads now have other radio technologies in it. So we're using those same radio those same access points with other radio technologies like Bluetooth Low Energy, BLE. That's how we're doing wayfinding. So a lot of times now we have the mix of those pieces that really drive an experience and the data set that comes off of that. So we know how people are utilizing it. But ultimately, we're eliminating the sprawl and the scale we talked a little bit about before around the industry has grown up with buying specific use technologies and then try to integrate it together. Well, I have a Wi-Fi EP in both my head anyway for Wi-Fi. If I use that for Bluetooth Low Energy, I can now drive wayfinding. I can drive asset tracking solutions. If I want super granular asset tracking, ultra wide bands in that access point as well from a radio standpoint. So it's really the blend of those that it's just not about Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi data, yes, is zone and floor, as I talked about. The aggregate could be an entire building. But that is really where we start from the standpoint of understanding the data. And there's other technologies out there now that this notion of WIDAS, where it's called open roaming, where roaming agreements have been struck with, you know, AT&T, T-Mobile, so I can actually just jump on the Wi-Fi automatically without an end user touching it, where it can be that other form of connectivity to get people on the infrastructure to make it super seamless, potentially eliminating the cost of like distributed antenna systems inside of space. So it's, yes, it's Wi-Fi. To your question, the data set is really good at, you know, floors, at zones, but the challenge with going through the walls, that's when we turn to an optical camera because there's going to be a video endpoint. If it's the right video endpoint, we think it's Cisco, in terms of looking at that from the standpoint of what's actually happening inside the room.
So one of the big things that we saw post-pandemic with our clients is that CEOs and COOs, and you can go down the list of the C-suite executives, really started caring maybe 5 to 10x more about how their employees were using Workspace because they had the before and after of before COVID and after COVID. So I'm curious, what are you seeing as the biggest changes that are going on in the workplace and kind of how has it evolved over particularly these last 5 years?
Yeah, over the last, you know, post-pandemic, I think the jury was still out, if you would, in terms of the RTO piece, right? Return to office. Are we coming back to the office? And some organizations mandated 5 days a week. Others said, you know, come back whenever you'd like. I think we've sort of settled right now in terms of 5 years from now. The biggest difference was, and we still see this, is that the spaces that people have are still inadequate. And it's inadequate from the standpoint of how we work now and how we work across this physical and virtual medium, but also in the terms of getting prepared for the future of the impact of AI in terms of what the opportunities are for everyone to be able to leverage that. And so by and large, what we see is more collaborative spaces for our customers. At Cisco, for example, we start with 70% collaborative space, 30% focus work or me space, right? So our we now is 70%, our me is 30%. And we see that permeating through multiple industries right now in terms of how do you actually think of those space constructs. But what we also see is this notion of, you know, it's really about the people. And if you think about space and you think about real estate, a lot of times it was a CFO or a COO function inside of organizations. We're seeing more and more move over into the HR world. So for example, our real estate leader works for our chief people policy and purpose officer called CHRO. Because space really is about the people. And what we see happening now is that once we've figured out how much collaborative space and the mix of space and the space types, a lot of not dedicated space, like free address space, we now see the, you know, the ability for us to layer in the well-being aspect of it, which matters. How do I maximize natural daylight? How do I do circadian rhythm? How do I think about air quality? And that's why you see us as an organization, as a company, right? That what we produce for the world, we're putting in sensors into everything that we do. Sensors not for IT purposes, sensors for understanding temperature, humidity, VOC, ambient noise, right? Aligning around some of the principles that are out there from a well perspective. And so that well-being is now front and center as well in terms of really making sure that the space is appropriate based on biology a lot of times in terms of making sure it's best for us as human beings to be able to achieve our best work. But it also helps for the space to become a magnet and people want to be there. And so we've seen, you know, very clearly now, it's very clear in the data in our own spaces, but our customer spaces, people want to be in these types of spaces. It's just not the new shiny object and it's, hey, it's a new space and it's going to lose its luster after, say, a year. We're now 3 years out, 4 years out almost, and the spaces that are built this way and designed this way and operate this way and care about well-being are the ones that people want to be at.
So one of the biggest buzzwords that I hear that my clients all want to be at is smart buildings. And can you give an example of a smart building project that you've worked on and kind of some of the technology that's driving like what a smart building is?
Yeah, I will use our example of our own space, which was really our first sort of flagship, if you would. If you think about us in organization, we've been in the smart buildings world forever, but it was really around the notion of what can happen in the core and shell of a structure, right? Converging all those disparate infrastructures on one network. It's fantastic. Then we get the data together. But really, we saw an opportunity to take advantage of, as the IT industry modernized and we've added capabilities to our elements and our products, we can now take that data and move it and be able to drive smart building outcomes. So as an example for our Penn 1 space is we had a fundamental, you know, thesis that if we can move everything to become data, then we can prepare for this world of AI that we're now entering right now. And so, you know, when we think about this notion of intelligence in the smart buildings, we also wanted to solve for, a lot of times you look at smart buildings projects around the globe, it became an integration project. It became an integration project, taking a bunch of disparate technologies together, threading them together, making them work together, customized software. And you had to care and feed for that over the many years. So our approach was one platform that we talked about. Two is that how do you make all these things just work together, literally out of the box? But it's got to be built on top of technology mindset first, right? That technology forward approach. And so when we looked at it, we didn't start with design and we didn't start with the technology stack. Yes, we started with user experience, but we also started with the data. Like, what do we actually want to do from a data standpoint? So for example, we want to sense air quality. The natural thing would be, hey, I'm going to go put an air quality system in. We took a step back and said, you know, what's everything above our head? As an example, inside the space, right? I have lighting up there, mechanicals, but how does all that connect? Where does the data, what's the data set? And how can I make that open and not be, you know, stuck in a silo? So for example, we move our entire ceiling, everything to low voltage. And so we look at that from a low voltage standpoint, great, that's the energy side, but the low voltage happens to be what the industry, our industry has used forever to power a telephone, power over Ethernet. And so this power over Ethernet now has the ability to have a lot of energy on that cable, but the key is that there's now data on it. So everything became data above our head, which was a key strategic priority for us because we needed to be able to stand the test of time to plug anything in the future without having to be a project. So we look at that from an underpinning standpoint. We really think about those four, you know, design imperatives that we talked about before around this mixed presence experience, with frictionless when you get in there, sustainability aligning around that notion of removing a body carbon, but looking at the operational carbon. And that is that fundamental power over Ethernet, low voltage ceiling, if you would. Then the wellness side of it, when we talked a little about wellness before and the ability for us to add all the sensors into everything that we do, that's going to be there anyway. Again, not a specific use case for a specific technology set. How do we blend it into everything that we have inside the environment already? And the fourth was that data element to prepare for the future, what we see now from a AI perspective. And when you walk into our space, you walk in and the space starts with understanding people, not who you are, but number of people with our surveillance cameras. To us, that was a natural one. Start with surveillance cameras because they're going to be there. Let's do some people count on them, or what we call our MV line of surveillance cameras. I'm adding that intelligence there. Wi-Fi, we're deploying with density of like one AP for every 1,000 square foot, not for Wi-Fi, but for BLE, for ultra wideband that we talked a little bit about before. The network became extensible everywhere above your head because the lights, the shades, the mechanical controls, everything became low voltage based on data, right? Because the network now servicing, not just giving you, you know, the data side, but it's also power. And then the ability for us to ground ourselves in the data that comes out of our collaboration, video technology, it's in the room. And so all of this just works together. It rolls up into the cloud, into a cloud service called Spaces, literally works out of the box, right? That was our big idea for us to be able to take and not have a smart building that was a bunch of Legos that you had to put together, but you can have this out of the box. If you subscribe to this with our partner technologies, just not Cisco technologies, I'm going to have success in this smart building standpoint. So you walk inside the space becomes alive. Of course, there's lighting zones everywhere. We, you know, devices, you automatically jump onto the infrastructure and you walk into a room. The room says, hello, Bob, as an example. I like, you know, from a temperature standpoint, we're taking the people count in the room and be able to take and influence thermal comfort inside the space. Everything is automated, right? The shades go up and down based on radiometers on the roof of the building, lux level sensors, but it's all a system and it all works together. And there's no integration of all these custom software packages that have been out there forever in terms of driving that smart building.
So the future will likely be smart, at least in some degree or another. And I'd love to get into our final four and kind of talk about where you see the future of commercial real estate headed. And one of my first questions we always ask is, where do you think the modern workspace is headed? And what do you think will change the most about how we work if you're forecasting 5 or 10 years out?
I think what we're going to see is small group is here to stay. I think when you look at some of the, you know, agile, whether it's agile software development models, it's small groups, right, that come together. Small groups for sure are going to be here to stay. When we look at it from the future capability set, I think we're at a point now where we see that technology needs to be forward, but not everyone's doing it. The industry has to adapt and adopt to that because technology is not going to go away. And then AI, right? This AI element, and for the AI, again, to have really good AI and really good models, you need the data. And to be able to have this data, you can't be 6 months of data. It needs to be years of data to inform these models for us to get to this AI, you know, future. And so as we look now, we're using AI more and more and more internally. We're even doing AI for visioning of projects. And this notion of AI is going to then be able to then be applied not only to the human worker, but we believe in this agentic future of AI. And we look at this agentic world, we often think about agents of, you know, agent for us as humans or our digital worker, our counterpart, an agent for every space, an agent for every place, an agent for operations of whether it's the IT side or the OT side of the house. So that agentic world is going to be here, right? And then there's a lot of discussion, and you see it, I'm sure, at industry shows and stuff around this notion of humanoids and what's going to happen there. At some point, at the end of the day, they're going to need some form of connectivity, which is why you have this need to have this robust infrastructure under the covers. And from that aspect, I think it's going to be that future of, yes, where we are today, small groups staying, it's going to be technology forward, it's going to be AI enabled, we're going to get to agentic. And then after that, you know, it's going to be super interesting to watch.
So we always love to travel to the future, but one of the things that we get a lot of value in, particularly our younger audience, is taking a step back and kind of traveling back. So if you could travel back to the start of your career and give yourself one bit of advice, what would it be?
It's a great question. One of the person that hired me, 25 years ago, the one piece of advice that he gave me, his name was Jim, that Jim gave me was take risk, right? So I took that to heart. And I've always looked at in terms of trying to figure out where, looking where I think an industry is going to go and sort of, you know, that no pun intended, skate where the puck is going, right? You always hear that, but it takes risk to go there to do that. Yeah. I wish I had started earlier in my career, and maybe it's because it's the rise of social and LinkedIn and those tools in terms of building that network sooner, but it was a very different world. So I could say like, okay, we didn't have the tools to do that. It was a very microcosm in terms of that, but like building that network of individuals that you either can obviously learn from, get advice from, but also in terms of, you know, it's oftentimes you run into someone and say, I haven't seen them in 20 years, but it's really that network of folks that I wish I had started building earlier. And now folks that are earlier in career, there's no excuse. They have the tools. They're out there, right? You know, be super visible in LinkedIn, but provide thoughtful elements out there in terms of how do you move your particular industry forward.
So one of the ways we like to move this podcast forward and move all of our audience members' brain forward is looking at sources, particularly sources in books, alternatives to this conversation. Conversations in the podcast world are great, particularly sometimes recommendations that come from the experts that we have on. So I'm curious, if you had a recommendation, what would that be?
For books, some of these books are dated. Some are about leadership, but I thought one of the best, most impactful books about leadership is Team of Teams by General Stanley McChrystal. It was a while ago, right? And it'd be more.
It's still a great book. I'm not gonna poo poo it.
It is a great book. It's now I just read Cisco blogs, but no, you know, you think about leadership and being steadfast in your commitment and just being super highly focused. Like, and you think about what Sully did with landing that plane. I happened to live there and I saw it there, and thinking about, you know, and reading Highest Duty was also something impactful for me, because it shows just how, I mean, to think about the nerves of steel that had to happen there. And like oftentimes when, especially when you're trying to change an industry, which I think this industry is going under a rapid change, obviously COVID forced some of this, but like this notion of technology coming into it, there's oftentimes you think, is like, this is really going to happen? And you have to have that commitment and conviction that 100% this is absolutely going to happen.
Yeah, we've had a lot of change in the industry. A lot of it's overdue, though. And one of the ways that we try to change the minds of those who listen to the podcast, and we've been very successful at, I think, moving the industry forward, even within our own little bubble, is to get some of the best and brightest voices on and kind of give them their perspective of the podcast and the real estate world in general. And I'm curious, if you could give us one voice who should come on the podcast next, what would it be?
From the real estate world?
Yeah, or just somebody who affects the real estate world broadly.
I look at, you know, I spend a lot of time in New York from a real estate standpoint, working on iconic projects like Hudson Yards and Manhattan West, and, you know, building stadiums like Yankee Stadium, et cetera. And you look at thought leaders in the industry, and there's a vice chairman that comes to mind that works at JLL. His name is Scott Panzer. And Scott is front and center, not just from the standpoint of real estate, but also technology. And so when you look at that unique blend of someone that, you know, he represented an agency for Sheldon Solo's properties when he was still alive, you know, some of the most prominent addresses in New York, but the ability to blend that together with technology, because again, we talked about before, I'm a technologist first in my career. It's technology's front and center in my heart. That would be who would come to mind.
Well, we'll have to reach out. There's one final question that we always like to ask on the podcast, and it's simply, what's the best way if somebody wants to get in touch that they can reach out to you, Bob?
On LinkedIn is the best way. I'm out on LinkedIn. It's LinkedIn/BobCicero. I'm happy to connect with others. And, you know, my travels, often like to meet folks in the cities if I have the time. But feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Bob, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today. And we have to have you on in the future.
Gordon, thank you. This was fantastic. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks again to Bob. We appreciate his insights. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. Your comments, interactions, and subscriptions truly matter and help us continue to get quality guests. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gordon Lanfear with the Real Finds Podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you.